Israel's president denied it yesterday, but today the US-based author who alleges that Israel offered to sell nuclear material to South Africa at the height of the apartheid regime is standing by his claims. The Israeli government has long maintained a policy of ambiguity on whether or not it has its own nuclear weapons capability. But when the UK Guardian splashed with the story that it had offered nuclear warheads to South Africa in the 1970s, the president, Shimon Peres, who was the defence minister at the time, issued a strongly worded denial, saying that Israel has never negotiated the exchange of nuclear weapons with South Africa and that there is no basis in reality for the claims. He added there was no signed Israeli document that confirms the existence of talks or negotiations on a subject of this kind. But Sasha Palikar-Saransky says he relied on classified South African documents and interviews with high-ranking political and military figures in both South Africa and Israel to make the accusations and to write his book, The Unspoken Alliance, Israel's Secret Relationship with Apartheid South Africa. He spoke to me from New York earlier today. Sasha Palikar-Saransky, your book's been making headlines around the world even before it's released, with its claim that the Israeli government offered nuclear material to the South African government in the 1970s. Now, Israel's president, Shimon Peres, was adamant yesterday that he did no such thing when he was foreign minister. How certain are you of your evidence?
Well, Shimon Peres is being evasive in his denials. Part of what he has said is true. He claims that his signature is not on a document that includes minutes from a meeting during which this topic was first broached. Shimon Peres was defense minister at the time in March 1975, and in early April 1975, 4 days after the first document, he signs a secrecy agreement with South African defense minister P.W. Botha, pledging both countries to absolute secrecy in all of their nuclear and conventional military dealings. There's also a third document from March 31, 1975, the same day as the initial meeting and discussion of the missiles with three different types of warheads, and the South African chief of staff writes to his superiors on that same day talking about Jericho missiles with nuclear warheads and how beneficial those particular missiles, an Israeli missile system, mind you, would be for South Africa's defense strategy. Now, it's entirely possible that Shimon Peres was discussing these issues and leading the South Africans to believe that such an offer was forthcoming without the authorization of then Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin. But the documents in my possession do confirm that these discussions took place and that the South Africans, very high-level South Africans, came away from these discussions believing that they had been offered nuclear-capable Jericho missiles.
Mr. Peres has not specifically denied there was a meeting, but he says there were no nuclear negotiations. Is it possible that either you're misreading the South African documents or that the South Africans misunderstood what was on offer?
It is possible that the South Africans misunderstood the offer. However, it's very, very unlikely based on the other documents published around this time. I mean, you have to look at thousands of documents to really get a sense of this. Like I said, the deal never went through, but it was broached and it was on the table and the South Africans took it very seriously that even though this deal was aborted, cooperation in the very same field, Jericho missiles, continued well throughout the 1980s. In 1979, the Israelis invite South Africans to come and observe a Jericho missile test in Israel. And then in the 1980s, the two countries cooperate extensively in South Africa at a testing range where they are working together to develop Jericho-based missiles that are capable of carrying the second generation of nuclear weapons that South Africa was working on at the time. So even if these weapons were never sold, the actual project continued in a different form as a joint research and development effort based in South Africa. This went on for a long time. This is not an isolated story based in 1975 alone.
As you say, though, the deal didn't go ahead. Do the documents indicate why?
The documents suggest that the South Africans thought that it was too expensive and that they were also interested in developing their own indigenous nuclear program. As you know, South Africa attained a nuclear capability in the early 1980s, and in 1975 they were fairly far along in their own research and development and preferred to go ahead and pursue cooperation with the Israelis on nuclear-capable missile technology in a different way. They relied on Israeli know-how, essentially, and Israeli experts on rocketry and delivery systems who came down to South Africa under heavy, heavy secrecy.
Now, your book does show there was significant military cooperation between the two nations, even if the nuclear element is disputed. Was Israel breaking any international sanctions put on South Africa by selling it arms?
Absolutely. It was a violation of the United Nations mandatory arms embargo, and they violated the embargo starting in 1977 and throughout the 1980s. And there were other countries selling to South Africa, but by the early 1980s, there were very few left, and Israel became a vital link for South Africa at that point when it wasn't able to obtain aircraft technology and various other important military technologies from any other source.
And what was the scale of the trade?
In the late 1980s, it tops $1 billion in a single year in 1988. So the total over a 20-year period, based on the documents I have from Arms Corps, which is South Africa's parastatal arms manufacturer, those documents indicate that we're looking at a figure of approximately $10 billion over the period 1974 to 1993. However, this figure may be low because there was also, like I said earlier, joint research and development and financing arrangements. So this was another element of the cooperation. However, it's very difficult to quantify because those numbers don't show up in the purchasing data from the South African government or the South African arms manufacturer, Arms Corps.
Do the documents that you've seen indicate that South Africa was selling uranium to Israel?
Absolutely. This began in 1961 and is actually, in some ways, a more scandalous part of the story than the one revealed on the front page of The Guardian. Essentially, South Africa began selling uranium in 1961 and continued to do so throughout the 60s and early 70s. However, all of these sales were governed by what's called a bilateral safeguards agreement, and that essentially means that the two governments agreed that the uranium shipped to Israel would be used for peaceful purposes only. In 1976, the Israeli government requests that the South African government lift these safeguards, and by lifting the safeguards, that means that they could use the uranium for whatever purposes they wished, and the South African government did so.
How unlikely a relationship was this? I mean, when it began, it was at a time when South Africa's president was an open Nazi sympathizer.
Well, yeah, the South African government, certainly in the 1940s, the man in question, John Vorster, was an apologist for the Nazis and quite overtly full of praise for National Socialism in Europe. So it is ironic that these two countries got in bed with one another. And I argue in the book that the motivations in the beginning were purely economic, and Israel was reeling from the Yom Kippur War, and its economy was in shambles. But what you see in the late 1970s, after the Likud Party comes to power, is that it goes beyond pure economics. And several leading officials in the Likud Party and in the military establishment spoke out quite openly in defense of the apartheid regime, and they really perceived South Africa's struggle against the African National Congress and other black liberation movements as very similar to Israel's battle against the PLO and the Arab states. So you start to see in the late 70s and early 80s a real sense of identification with the South Africans, and at that point the relationship ceases to be purely economic and takes on an ideological flavor.
Was there much opposition from within the Jewish community in Israel to this developing relationship with South Africa?
There was some. I wouldn't call it extensive. There were people in the Knesset, Israel's parliament, who opposed it. There were definitely many people on the Israeli left who saw this relationship as immoral and challenged the government, but they really didn't get their way until the late 1980s when Israel finally imposed sanctions. And even then, as I said earlier, arms deals continued. It's very, very difficult to get any documentation in Israel. I would certainly love to see some of those documents, and perhaps President Peres is willing to release some in order to substantiate the denial that he issued yesterday, but I wouldn't count on it.
Sasha Polakasaransky, thanks very much for speaking to us.
Thank you for having me.
And that's Sasha Polakasaransky, whose book about Israel's relationship with South Africa was released in the US this week. And you can listen to the full interview, where he goes into a lot more detail about the documentation behind his allegations, on our website at www.abc.net.au/worldtoday.